Leland asked me how, as a lawyer, I became so interested in books and book collecting. One answer is I grew up in a family very much interested in books. I recall my father in his retirement starting to read Dickens all over again. My mother, who was on the school board in my hometown of Radford, Virginia, persuaded the board to keep Latin in the public high school for 4 years as preparation for colleges like Davidson. Her father was a Virginia newspaper editor with a love of the English language, and his father, a Presbyterian minister, had a library of which I have a remnant, including one volume of Macaulay's History of England, a first edition of which is in this collection. My wife shares my interest in books. She is a member of the Alexandria, Virginia Library Company, a successor of the organization which founded the Alexandria Library System. And the main building of the present library is named after her grandmother, Dr. Kate Waller Barrett, all of which indicates that we can instill in our children and grandchildren a love of reading which will give them pleasure for the rest of their lives. But how did I get into book collecting? When I was with the Department of Justice in the 50s and 60s, there were many used bookstores. They weren't called rare book stores then, in the general area of the department building. They're all gone now. A number of us would sometimes browse in them at lunchtime, and occasionally I'd buy a book, but it never occurred to me to buy any books to begin a collection. I also missed a golden opportunity to buy books in England, and my job took me there frequently. Sometime later, when my wife and I went on summer vacation to New England, she loved to go into antique shops. Well, I too like antiques. I would look at them for 10 minutes and then go back and read the newspaper in the car. However, if there were books in the store, I would examine them and stay a little longer. As time went on, I would look around the neighborhood to see if I could find a little bookstore, and did find some. Then as time went on, while Cornelia was still in the antique store, But as time went on, I started buying books. She decided we had too many antiques and stopped buying them. So now, when I stop at a bookshop, she stays in the car and reads the paper. Or if the urge is too great, she looks around for a little antique shop in the same area. When I first started buying books, someone told me that a book was the first edition of the date, and the title page match the date on the copyright page. These books are first editions, and I think we feel closer to the author in a first edition, and more so if it happens to be his first book, and even more so if it's signed by the author. I tried the idea of matching the copyright page with the date on the title page, and discovered to my chagrin this was just the start of the process. The books I bought using only this criteria for $10 or $15 proved to be poor bargains. Around this time in my education, I bought at an antique mall for $35 and almost new Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson, dated 1905 and published by Scribner's in the United States. Stevenson is an author I've read from boyhood. The book had no copyright page, and many old books do not. Someone had marked on the flyleaf, first illustrated edition. When I got home, I consulted my Bible for book collecting, Van Allen Bradley's Handbook of Values, now somewhat outdated. But the only U.S. illustrated edition listed was the 1913 one illustrated by M.C. White. I still haven't found any reference to my 1905 book, but I've seen similar copies for $10. However, I recouped on Kidnapped. After I'd become more knowledgeable about book collecting, I went to a very large book sale in Washington and saw what appeared to be a first edition of this book with the hard-to-find Folding Treasure Map, published in London in 1886. It was not in the special books section, which they had it to sale, but it was in the run-of-the-mill $5 books. It indeed turned out to be a first edition and is in this collection. I gradually learned some of the intricacies of buying first editions and that there are points to look for, points and quotation marks. In some books, for example, the lack of small corrections or misspellings and the like in first editions, which can make a so-called first issue, and the book before the correction has been made, is many times more valuable than the corrected version. Further, I learned that in modern first editions after the 1920s, a dust jacket may be essential, and there may also be a first edition of dust jackets. An extreme example is Gone with the Wind. The copy in the collection has a second issue dust jacket, quite legitimately, since the publisher ran out of first issue jackets. The only difference in the jackets is in the order of the books advertised in the back. I passed up a first edition with a first issue jacket, which was $1,000 more than the book in the second issue jacket, which I bought. It is easy to note my favorite authors in the collection, since I have included more than one of their books. Charles Dickens is one with David Copperfield in Pickwick's Papers. You may recall in David Copperfield, Mr. Micawber, said to be patterned after Dickens' father, whose problem was one many people still have. He had a yearly income of 19 pounds, but he spent 21 pounds. We will also always remember the laconic marriage proposal which David was asked to write to his old nurse, Peggotty, from her phlegmatic suitor, Barkis, that Barkis is willing. There are two pages attached to the Pickwick volume in the original weekly parts that sold for 1 shilling each. The other books are Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter, Stockton's Late Lady, and Tiger, and Stevenson's Ebb Tide. Robert Frost is one of my favorite poets and was a favorite friend of John F. Kennedy. His poem, The Gift Outright, in Frost's Complete Poems, which is in this collection, begins, "The land was ours before we were the land. She was our land more than 100 years before we were her people. She was ours in Massachusetts and Virginia, but we were England's. Still colonial." Frost first read this poem to Phi Beta Kappa chapter at William & Mary College. He later read the poem with an addition at Kennedy's inauguration. This version is included in the clearing in this collection. There was a touching moment at the outdoor inauguration when the wind blew one of the pages of the poem out of the venerable poet's hands. Someone repeated it, but of course Frost did not need the page to finish the poem. My hope is that the exhibit of this small collection may influence some of you to look in your attic and offer to the library interesting, perhaps valuable books. But Leland reminds me that just because a book is 100 years old doesn't mean it's necessarily valuable. Or if you, an alternative to that would be to make a gift to Davidson be used in the library. Thank you very much.